Vol'jin said I should step out of the shadows. So I did. Here I am asking you to join the fight. For the Horde! And for the Forsaken. Welcome to Corpse Run Radio.
This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken. We are the Forsaken.
I hear you want to take it old school. Let's go.
Ooh, boy, slash two. Talking like you're some brand new. But they don't make you like they used to. But you can heal me all day. Ooh, boy, trade chat. How long since you were sub last? The way you're shouting, where's my talents? And I know we're gonna play. I wanna take it through Black Rock. And we can ride it through Max. Donovanix. You wanna recap? I think it's the same. Turn back the clock on this whole game. Call it a day, bring it in the right brain tactic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you. Baby, you're so classic.
Ooh, I'll invite ya. Dungeon views will excite ya. LFG instead of slash three. Nothing ever stays the same.
No, they don't.
You're a paladin healing in holy. I'm a blood decay throwing AoE. And it's dungeon free cause my threat's easy. Getting back into the game.
I wanna take it through Black Rock
Mountain.
And we can run it through Nats. Dotemonic Sea's room. Get core tuned, but we're in the wrong X-Fact. You wanna recap? I think it's the same. Turn back the clock on this whole game. In my hall of fame. Everything is so throwback-ish. I kinda like it, like you're wearing tier 3. Old school chic, 51 talents and Captain 60. Calling your name, bringing in the right brain tactic. Baby, you're so classic.
Ooh, yeah.
Baby, you're so classic.
Talent trees, so classic. Baby, please. Let's take it back to class.
So classic.
Let's take it on back. Let's take it to the start. Back to the game that once stole my heart. When mounts in the 40s, plague lands in the 50s. Can't wait till I cap out of 60. You with me? Playing with no X-Facts. I'm raiding through max way before rap. MC Blackwing AQCG right before the patch changed it. Take me back to
you
classic.
Recap, the same. Turn back the clock. Call this whole game in my hall of fame. Call everything is so throwback-ish. I like it, like you're wearing tier 3. Old school chic, 51 talents and Captain 60. Calling your name, bringing in the right beat tactic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you're so classic.
So I guess the real question is, do you consider yourself a law or a lawbringer?
What you've just heard was Classic by Silver Latomi and Kavo 350. Hello and welcome to episode 31. This episode is obviously going to be about recapping experiences of BlizzCon from last weekend and highlighting a couple of the features that we got announced. For me though, I want to talk a little about my experiences, my personal experiences at BlizzCon 2017. This year's BlizzCon was my second, and I thought that being there the second time would take away from the experience itself, from the uniqueness. Not by much, obviously, but still it would be like the first year for me. Last year was this unique feeling of doing everything for the first time. So I really didn't know what to expect this year. What would be the point where I thought, well, this is a thing I've done last year, so it's not gonna be as special. But let me tell you, almost everything that I did was unique, was a new experience in its own way, because I did it most oftentimes with different people in different surroundings, like standing in line to get into the con itself at opening day. I talked to this couple and we had such a interesting conversation about, I can't remember what it was, but last year it was, I stood there and was focused on myself, soaking in the experience of standing in line for my first BlizzCon, and this year I was experiencing the standing in line thing so totally different. So that's a thing where my impression is that you can do things over and over, but the circumstances that you do them in are what make them unique. So not sure if I'm making sense of it, but yeah, anyway. Obviously when we got into the con itself and the announcements started to happen, the vanilla one was kind of out of left field, so yeah. I mean, people say that they once Jay started talking about ice cream, they knew. Since I'm not a native English language speaker, once he said vanilla, I knew what it was about, but the lead up was nothing that caught my attention. So, but then when the video played with Chromie, it was just so awesome. I can hardly keep a dry eye at this moment when I think about that we finally going to get this hopefully vanilla experience back. I don't want them to add in any of the quality of life changes that we got after vanilla. I want them to keep it as genuine as possible, because that's what it was. And if you don't want it, then that's not what you want. It's a thing where people sign up for vanilla, then vanilla it's what they're gonna get. So it might be that people say yes, this, that, or the other might be a thing that we would want. Like, one thing I definitely do not want, and not many people have referred to that, I definitely do not want achievement in vanilla service. As nice as achievements are, and go achievement hunting, they were part of 3.0.2. I remember vividly getting my first ever achievement when I stood in Shadrath. I logged into my Night Elf Priest because I played Alliance side on the EU side back then. I remember once I logged in, and I can't remember what I did, I got the very first achievement and I thought, what's that? And because all the websites like MMO Champion or that weren't as generally used as we use them now, so I didn't know about the fact that they were introducing achievement. And I thought, okay, this is like a pop-up and this is like a thing. I don't bother much about it. I couldn't care less because they're not relevant for gameplay. Boy, was I wrong. But still, I don't want those achievements because they are not part of vanilla content. Yes, they retroactively put in achievement for vanilla content, like the Loremaster and the Explorer and all that, but it's nothing that was there from the get-go, so I don't want them. Same with looking for group, the group finder. I don't want that. I want to have to run over to Deadmines. If I want to go into Deadmines, I want to have to go there on my Forsaken Warlock that I'm definitely going to play. No doubt about that. I would want to have to run there, fend my way through all the mobs and potentially getting killed over and over. I don't care. I want to do it the way I did it back then. And the same way I want the Alliance to have to fight their way to Shadowfang Keep, if that's where they want to go, or to, well, that's not quite the same, but Wailing Caverns is kind of neutral-ish because it's not quite as densely populated with horde mobs. More neutral mobs. So, but Shadowfang Keep definitely is a place where you would have to fight your way to as an alliance. So that's the thing that I really, really look forward to. Obviously, as a warlock main, I want to start on my warlock epic mount quest again, and I'm looking forward to doing all the minion quests again to unlock my minions. I'm not looking forward so much to paying for all the skills that my minions have to learn eventually, but that's just how it is. Same with hunters, they have to learn all the skills as well. Or was it just a warlock? I can't remember. Anyway, but the hunter will definitely have to go and find food for their pets, and if they don't, they have to buy it from a vendor, so that's going to be expensive as well. But that's my take on the vanilla classic, as they termed it now. WoW Classic. Now, as for the second announcement, Battle for Azeroth, having the Dark Lady be in the midst of it, I'm very happy with that. Although I'm not so happy with us maybe losing the Undercity. I look forward to this expansion so much. But as a Forsaken, I can truly say that it's very, very difficult for me to accept the fact that we are going to lose the Undercity. More so than I would be if I play on the Alliance side and Teldrassil is going to burn. So I think, and I'm not totally sure if it's a fair comparison, but without the intent of offending anyone, I think the Forsaken followers are some of the most passionate faction players because of the Dark Lady and because the uniqueness of the faction, in that we are the only faction that had to, I don't know how to put it, occupy someone else's land and make it our own. So I totally see why the Alliance want it back. But we made it such a stronghold, and it's a thing where I'm totally biased, totally. But that's a totally different thing. Okay, let's move on. The features of the expansion. I talked about it on another podcast about what I expected, and I talked to other people about what I expected, and about 80% of what I said then we got. So we got different starting zones for Horde and Alliance. That was going to happen because Jaina was coming back and going to Kol Tiras. So that meant that the Horde could not go to Kol Tiras because reasons. So they had to come up with a different method. So that meant different starting zones, in this case, different starting continents for Horde and Alliance for the first time. I wasn't sure about whether we were going to get Zandalar or Undermine, because those two factions were literally both valid choices. Kol Tiras was a given, as I said, Jaina, duh. And then what comes next is the thing that we are not going to see yet. But we are definitely going to see the first raid, which is Ul'dir, I think. Yeah, Ul'dir is the one where they have this Titan laboratory or is it a Titan building that the trolls use as a laboratory? I can't remember, like something like that, where we get the first hint of a unique common goal, where it's not faction-specific content that we have to deal with. So, and then Ian, I think it was hinted at the second raid being about Ashara, which will automatically mean that we are going to have to deal with En-Soth, I would imagine, because I can't imagine that her being by herself, quote-unquote, and En-Soth not being in the game in any way, shape or form. So he might like bring out a couple of his tentacles to support her or to harm us or to distract us or God knows what. But that's a thing where that's definitely going to happen. So my predictions with regards to that, the ones that I made. Then obviously there are the additional things that we get that I didn't predict, which is the faction war. I'm not sure if I ever hated Anduin more than I do now. Gen Greymane, obviously, sure, but yeah, that's the thing. So I'm really, really looking forward to this. People say, where does this faction clash come from again? I totally get how it gets brought back to the forefront, in that for one, Gen Greymane wants his revenge on the Dark Lady. And I know that she is quite pissed at him with regards to Aeir and him destroying the lantern in the cinematic in Stormheim. So there are the animosities that bubble under the surface, and it's like a match to kindling that lights the fire. As for people that I met at BlizzCon, I was so very happy to finally meet Patty Madsen, the voice actress that gives her voice to the Dark Lady. And thanks to her, we've got a bunch of new intros and a new outro. So expect to hear quite a few new sound bites at the beginning of the next few shows. Thank you very much, Patty. I had the chance to talk to a couple of developers and get their take on some aspects of the upcoming expansion. And then last but not least, we had the awesome parties at the Hilton this year again, where I must say that the people that hosted the parties did an outstanding job, starting with DitchCon, going to Con Before the Storm, and finishing off with the CTR party. It was really, really a awesome experience to dive into the community of Blizzard gamers and see how passionate they are once again. And I think I can truly say that the Blizzard community is one of the, if not the most passionate gaming communities out there. It was really, really awesome, and if at all possible, I'm definitely going back next year. Okay, that's it for me for the time being. Let's get on with the show. You've heard me rambling on long enough. First up, we have Asmongold with his take on the classic servers.
Sup, y'all? It's me. It's your boy, Asmongold. And today, I want to talk to you all about official Blizzard Legacy servers. Now, guys, that is something that I thought that I would not say in the next 5, probably more likely 10 years. But here we are, Blizzard announced vanilla servers alongside their new expansion, Battle for Azeroth. And guys, I have to talk about this. This is something that I've been wanting, something that I've been pushing, something that I've been advocating for over 2 years. And here we are, all of those efforts have been realized, and our voices have been heard. Thank you all so much for your support. Thank you so much for doing this, and thank you, Blizzard, for making this happen. And this would not be possible without every single person in this community pushing for it, advocating for it, asking for it, and here it is. Thank you guys all so much. And I want to talk to you all about what I think the official Legacy servers are going to look like, what I think is going to change, what I think is going to stay the same, and everything else in between. Now, I'm not really going to talk a whole lot about the new expansion right now. I'm very excited for that too. But I want to focus entirely on the Legacy server stuff, because that's one of the main things that I've wanted for a very long time, as you guys know. Now, one thing that you might not know is that I knew about this ahead of time. We were told ahead of time all of the new things that were going to happen in the expansion, including the Legacy server announcement. Now, whenever I was told this, I was sitting in the hotel room in the corner. And whenever I heard, like, oh yeah, there are also any, like, so it was like kind of saving the best for last. And he's like, yeah, well, they're also, gonna announce classic servers. And I'm like, I literally fucking got out of my... I was actually sitting in like a sofa chair thing. I got out of my chair and I ran around the hotel lobby so fucking fast, like just flipping out. I was so excited. I was so happy. And it was the last thing that I could have expected. And I am just absolutely ecstatic about it. It made the entire trip worth it so much more. So guys, I don't even really even know what to say. But here's what I think is going to happen. The official Legacy servers are probably not going to come out until 2019. I don't think that the official Legacy servers are going to be released until we're probably a little bit more than halfway through with Battle for Azeroth, the expansion, and might be probably like somewhere around there. And they're probably going to release them in between a raid tier to kind of even out a lull in content. Usually at the end of an expansion, there is a big gap between the last raid tier and the next expansion. That is where I would expect to see Legacy servers come in. Now, whenever Legacy servers are implemented, obviously they kind of discuss some things with me, and I'm not entirely sure what I'm not supposed to say, so I'm just not going to say any of it, but I am going to talk to you guys about what I would really like to see. Number one is I don't want to see any changes. I don't want to see any quality of life changes. I don't want to see, obviously, a group finder. I don't want to see new models. I don't want to see balancing changes. The only changes that I would like to see, and here's how far to that degree that I'm at. Like, you guys remember the bug where, like, your character would be, like, kneeling down and, like, looting, and, like, you looted something 5 minutes ago, but you're still kneeling down trying to loot it? I would rather that be in the game than not, okay? That's how far to the essential classic vanilla experience that I want to be, right? And I know that might be a little bit silly to some people, and I understand that, but I feel like whenever you start picking and choosing what elements of the old game that you want to have, it creates a slippery slope of adding in new context, adding in new content, adding in these little changes, and slowly but surely, you're diluting that initial experience and what made it so special. So I don't really want to see any changes. There are a few caveats to that. Obviously, there are things like duping. There are things like just exploits that crash the servers. And generally, as long as something is not game-breaking, I would like to see it be in the Legacy servers. I don't want to see any sort of change at all. I mean, really, I wouldn't even want to see a Battle.net integration, right, with friends lists. I'd want to see, like, actual individual friends lists. Just the same that we had in 2006. I'd like to be able to play the game in the exact same facility that I played it in 2006, and for some other people, 2005, 2004. Now, the next question that a lot of people have is that whenever the official Legacy servers are released, are they going to start, and are they going to be released with Naxxramas active and basically all of the content available on day one? My personal opinion is that no, they will probably not be. If they do that, I feel like it will be a very, very short experience, and I feel like they could stagger out the content for Legacy servers and build up the hype for them more by staggering out the different raids throughout the year or two in which they would be released on the normal schedule, right? So the game would come out, you'd have Onyxia's Lair, you'd have Molten Core, maybe later on they'd bring out BWL, and I think then there's ZG after that, or AQ, I forgot the specific release schedule from back then, and then maybe release Naxxramas a little bit later on. Now, a number of people have been very concerned about the longevity of Legacy servers, and I think that about 80 to 90% of people that start playing on Legacy servers are probably going to quit. Now, you might think that, well, I thought you liked Legacy servers. Doesn't that mean that, like, they're going to fail? Well, not necessarily. If you have, let's say, 10 million people that start on the server, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were that many. Honestly, I mean, this game, I mean, World of Warcraft has an audience of people, literally hundreds of millions of people have played World of Warcraft in probably the past 10 years. I'm sure that they'd probably have at least 10 million people that would try it out in the first year, right? I mean, especially with how much hype was behind it. So I'm not really going to be that surprised if a whole lot of people quit. And even with all of the people that quit, I still think that there will be distilled out of that a very, very healthy server population. And there will still be a lot of people playing Legacy servers for a very, very long period of time. You might think that, oh yeah, you're just going to go through all the content. It's like, oh yeah, you're just going to go through all of level 60 and progress through all of the raids and do Naxx in a month. It's like, that's probably not going to happen, right? So, especially if they stagger out the releases. So what I'm trying to say is that, obviously, a lot of people that are going to start playing Legacy are going to quit. There's going to be people that are going to start playing it for the nostalgia, be like, wow, this game sucked. I don't like this game anymore. I'm going to go play Battle for Azeroth. That's totally fine. That's great. But there are going to be some other people that are able to come back and they're going to be able to experience that same game that I experienced, that a lot of other people experience too, they're watching this, and they're going to love it. And the one thing that I can hope for more than anything is that people that are 16 now, which is like the age that I was whenever I started playing, and they need some sort of a confidence boost, they need some sort of an environment where they can succeed in. I really hope Legacy Servers can provide that in the same way that it provided that for me and for a lot of other people. I think that that's one of the big reasons why so many of those people are playing the game today, and so many people remember the vanilla memories so fondly. Obviously, a lot of it's nostalgia. I think that that's going to wear off very soon, and that's where I'm talking about the 80%. But whenever you're talking about millions, still 80%, could still be 20% of that, could still be millions. Now, the next question is that, are they going to be adding a Burning Crusade server afterwards? Now, I would not be surprised if the Legacy server did well, they're of course going to probably make a Burning Crusade server. Whenever they make a Burning Crusade server, are they going to let people just progress onto that? A perfect world, in my mind, would be as soon as they release the Burning Crusade server, they would re-release another vanilla server so people could progress through vanilla and do all of that. So there are always progressions, and every single time a new server is released, the other ones are reset in a way. So every single time, like let's say they do it all the way up in Wrath of the Lich King, they bring out the Wrath server, there's a new BC server, and there's also a new vanilla server. And so they kind of just stagger around and they just rotate back and forth with maybe a holding server for players at like level 80 or something like that. That's, in my opinion, an ideal solution for at least for me. So the way that I'm kind of expecting that to happen is for the Legacy servers to kind of be in between expansions. So if they're going to release the vanilla Legacy server in the middle or towards the end of Battle for Azeroth, they're going to release the Burning Crusade Legacy server, assuming the vanilla one does well, maybe towards the middle or the end of the expansion after Battle for Azeroth. And I think that's a pretty safe assumption to make, and that would be what I would like to see, and I think that'd be the smartest thing. That way, it could give players extra things to do, which also leads me into something else that I want to talk about, which is how are people going to access Legacy servers? I think that the best solution is to bundle Legacy servers with the current WoW subscription, and that would allow players to kind of, it's like cross-marketing, right? You have some players that come in to play Legacy servers, and maybe there's somebody who hasn't played WoW in 10 years, and they buy a sub, and they buy the game to play Legacy again, and they do, and they enjoy it, but then they check out maybe Battle for Azeroth, and they're like, yeah, I really like this too, and vice versa, you're going to have people from Battle for Azeroth that stay subscribed because they can play Legacy servers. I feel like this is going to be an overall huge positive for the game, and I'm really thinking that, I mean, assuming, like, unless, like, Battle for Azeroth is, like, terrible or something like that, I really think that whenever they announce Legacy servers and they release them, I mean, that we're going to see the highest subscription numbers of all time. I really do think that, because you're going to see probably millions of people coming back to the game to play Legacy servers, and even if it's only for a month or two, that on top of the new expansion, and if they're able to retain players in the same way that it seems like Legion is retaining players, which is better than WoD and Mists of Pandaria, I really think that it's probably going to be better than we even saw in Wrath of the Lich King. That doesn't mean necessarily the game will be in a better state or anything like that, but whenever you combine those two audiences, I think that we're going to see something amazing. And I cannot wait to show you guys. I cannot wait to create content about Legacy servers. And this has just gotten me so hyped up for the game. I love the idea of Battle for Azeroth. I love the idea of warring factions and getting back to the roots of World of Warcraft. And that coupled with Legacy vanilla WoW servers. I mean, what a BlizzCon to be at for my first one. I was so excited. I'm honestly still in shock. I honestly thought I was getting trolled whenever they told me that. And I really kind of thought I was still until they literally showed it on the screen. So guys, that's the way that I feel. I don't want to see any real changes. I don't want to see new character models. I don't want to see anything new in the Legacy servers. I want to see it be entirely a crystallized version of what we saw. I would like to see balancing patches be applied in the same way that they were in the old game. And I would also like to see content be released in the same time schedule as the old game, maybe slightly accelerated, because some people obviously I mean, like, people know everything right now. I mean, like, you've got, like, you got people, like, literally, who it's their job to help people understand the game. In 2006 and everything, it wasn't the case. So we're living in a different gaming world nowadays. But I do feel like the adventure and the RPG and the MMO elements that vanilla brought are still going to be absolutely just as relevant as they were in 2006 today. And I feel like there's nothing that can replace that. And that's why I'm so excited for Legacy Servers. So again, guys, I'd like to thank everybody who made this possible. I've made videos about this. I've complained about this. And so have you. There have been hundreds, thousands, millions of all of you that have put your voices together. And our voices have been heard. Like, I can't even believe it. I really can't. It's incredible. Thank you guys all so much. We all did this together. Congratulations. This is awesome. I really hope that Blizzard implements it in the right way. And with everything else that they're doing, I think that they will. So anyway, I'd like to hear your opinions, your thoughts, and how you feel about Legacy Servers. What do you want to see changed? What do you want to see stay the same? Etc. Let me know. But anyway, guys, that's pretty much all I've got. So thank you very much for watching, and like, comment, and subscribe.
How did we get
That was Charm with her new song, Battle for Azeroth. Now, after we had the announcement that the Horde is going to go to Zandalar, I thought, what better time than to start with a little troll lore. A couple of hours ago, Noble87 uploaded a video that is called The Story of the Amani Trolls, since it's actually about Zul'jin, the hero in Heroes of the Storm. But apparently he's going to dive into that troll tribe's lore. So without further ado, here is Noble87 with The Story of the Amani Trolls.
Hello everyone! Zul'jin has become a hero within Heroes of the Storm, so I figured it could be fun to talk about his storyline, but to understand it properly, we'll first have to dive into the history of the trolls, specifically that of the Amani Trolls. This story begins after the Titans finished up bringing order to the planet of Azeroth, and for generation after generation, life bloomed across the worlds. Especially the area around the Well of Eternity, it saw a lot of action as the arcane lifeblood from the Titan spirit inside the planets. It sped up the cycles of growth and rebirth. Soon enough, sentient beings evolved from the land's primitive life forms. Amongst the first were the Trolls, a race of savage hunter-gatherers who flourished in Azeroth's jungles and forests. Though they had only average intelligence, they did possess incredible agility and strength. Their unique physiology, it allowed them to recover from physical injuries at an astonishing rate, and they could even regenerate lost limbs over time. Now the Chronicles, it just gives the credit for this as it's part of how their bodies work, while older sources that used to claim it was actually the Loa or the Wild Gods, that they were the ones who sometimes gave the Trolls the power to regenerate. Either way, the Trolls developed some superstitious customs, some practiced cannibalism, and devoted themselves to war. A rare few amongst the Trolls, they actually searched for knowledge through mystic practices and meditation. Others worked on strengthening their ties to a dark and powerful form of magic known as voodoo.
Stay away from the voodoo.
But no matter their individual customs, all trolls shared a common religion that revolved around Kalimdor's wild gods, or as the trolls called them, the Loa. They worshipped them, and because of that, the trolls gathered near a series of peaks and plateaus in southern Kalimdor. This was home to many of the honored Loa. The trolls named the holy mountain range Zandalar and built small encampments upon its slopes. The most powerful group of trolls that formed, they were called the Zandalar tribe, and they claimed nearly all of these Zandalar's tallest plateaus, believing them to be sacred grounds. Atop the highest peaks, they created a small cluster of crude shrines. With time, these grew into a temple city known as Zul'Dazar. But those in power don't go unchallenged, and over the next several centuries, other tribes rose up to try and claim the Zandalari territory and power. Most notable of these tribes were the fearsome Gurubashi, the Amani, and the Drakari. The Gurubashi and Amani in particular, they laid claim to enormous patches of land in Kalimdor's lush jungles and woods. Sometimes, tribes would clash with each other, often over hunting grounds, yet major conflicts, they didn't really happen very often, and rarely did they last very long. Trolls were such skilled and fierce fighters that any real conflict between them, it would cost both sides dearly. There was plenty of untouched land to go around, and the different tribes, they quickly learned that it was wiser to resettle than to risk war. Only one place was forbidden to all by the tribe's witch doctors and priests, a small mound of blackened stone located at the base of the Zandalar Mountains. For many years, the trolls listened to the warning. None dared to disobey, but over time, curiosity won out. A group of rebellious trolls traveled to this forbidden mount, and they discovered that the black stones, they were actually the rough and sharp hide of a monstrous creature. They believed that this was some sort of undiscovered Loa, and a powerful one at that, considering that all the other spirits, they were frightened of this being. Foolishly, they performed vile rituals and living sacrifices to awaken the slumbering monstrosity. Unknown to the trolls was that this being was actually one of the two Kafraxi generals that were sent out centuries ago by Loken to take out Keeper Tyr. In that confrontation, Tyr called upon all of his power and he blew up one of them, but this Kafrax called Kafix was able to escape that area and make his way to what would be known as the Zandalar Mountains. His injuries were severe though, and the dark creature fell into a deep hibernation, and now the trolls, they were doing all that they could to wake the creature up. They succeeded, and the Kafrax looked upon the troll civilization with nothing but contempt. For it was but a pale shadow of what the Black Empire, the Empire of the Old Gods ruling the world of Azeroth before the Titan showed up, it was but a pale shadow of what that once was. Kifix knew it would delight the old gods to see this puny civilization rent to ashes, and he found a race of creatures to aid him with this task, the Akir, which it could control. The swarms were rallied, driving them to make war and establish their dominance over Azeroth once again. As Kifix took its time to expand its power and recover, the Akir began building a vast subterranean empire known as Ash-Akir. He patiently watched and waited as the Akiri ranks rose in number. When the time was right, the Kefrax led the insectoids from the underground empire and they swept across the land. The Akiri were like nothing the trolls had ever faced, and smaller tribes quickly fell before the legion of unrelenting insectoids. As the Akir came closer and closer to the Zandalar Mountains, the Zandalari moved to act. They decided to unite the different troll tribes into one single mighty force, which they called the Empire of Zul. They would put aside the differences and work together to face and destroy the Akir. It was the Zandalari who took on the role of commanding the troll armies. With their guidance, the other trolls used ambush tactics in the surrounding jungles to chop down the enemy's numbers. At another location, priests worked on summoning the Loa to assault their enemies. These ferocious wild gods, they joined the troll warriors in battle, ripping through the Akiri ranks and even wounding Kefix. They were forced to retreat before they could ever mount a proper siege on the sacred mountains. Kefix was now gravely wounded by the Loa, and he fled to the northeast with some of its closest Akiri followers. There it planned to regain more of its strength, while the insectoids, they continued their war against the trolls. Though they were successful in driving the Akiri away, the Zandalari knew full well that their enemies still posed a grave threat. They could not allow them to be left unchecked, for with time, they'd simply attack their outlying troll territories and maybe try another assault. That is why they decided to send the tribes out to hunt down the Akir and end their threat once and for all. No corner of the continent could be left unguarded, so the Zandalari convinced the most power-hungry troll factions to establish new strongholds across the world. Chief among these groups were once again the Amani, Gurubashi, and the Drakari. After they defeated the Akir, they could claim the fertile new lands for themselves without any competition from any of the other tribes. So it was that the Drakari, they pushed into the frigid north near Urduar. The Gurubashi decided to go southwest near Ankiraj, while the Amani, they set out to destroy none other than Kefix. They tracked its trail far to the northeastern woodlands, cutting through an unending mass of Akiri guardians. In a final savage battle, the entire tribe threw itself in a suicidal attack against Kefix and his remaining insectoid minions. In the end, only a tiny fraction of the troll army survived, but they were successful in bringing down the Kefrax. The victory came at a high cost, but the fearsome reputation of the Amani, it became legend amongst each and every tribe. On the spot where they had killed Kefix, the trolls then built their new settlement. It will one day grow into a massive sprawling temple city known as Zulaman. With their leader, with the Kefrax gone, the rest of the Akir, they no longer fought with as much ferocity or purpose. After many centuries of brutal battle between trolls and insectoids, the trolls managed to shatter the Akir Empire. The remaining insectoids, they were contained to the far northern and southern reaches of the continent. Those that survived fortified their underground colonies against further troll attacks. They showed no more interest in fighting, and in time, the trolls proclaimed themselves victorious. Now, as will one day happen with the Alliance as well, the lack of war to bind them all together, it caused the troll faction to grow ever more distant from each other. The widely spread strongholds of the different tribes, they grew into vibrant homes, temple cities, and eventually empires in their own rights. The Zandalari, they decided to withdraw to their mountain plateaus to pursue spiritual knowledge, but they would always maintain an immense influence over all the other troll societies. So that's how the trolls fought with Kefix and the Akir, and how they established different tribes and empires in the world. But of course, time didn't stand still, and a group of dark trolls, they found a way to the Well of Eternity. They eventually evolved into a race known as the Night Elves, led by the Queen Azshara. In her eyes, the trolls were nothing but a minor nuisance, their battle lust a symptom of primitive and unenlightened minds. She eventually struck an accord with the Zandalar tribe. In exchange for ending troll incursions into Night Elf territory, the Zandalari, they would be allowed by Azshara's grace to keep the sacred Zandalar mountain south of the Well of Eternity. The trolls were forced to agree, fully aware that they stood no chance against the Night Elves' arcane powers. This shameful agreement, it fostered the trolls' deep resentment towards the Night Elves, a bitter hatred that would carry on for generations to come. Now, as most of you know, Azshara and Highborn, they made contact with Sargeras and the Legion. It worked on bringing them into the world of Azeroth, using the Well of Eternity as their source of power for the portal. Eventually, other Night Elves found out about their plans, a resistance was formed, and the War of the Ancients played out. Even some of the Highborn knew what their queen was doing was not the right thing. Led by Dathomir Sunstrider, they abandoned the palace, and they too joined the resistance. In the end, the war was won, the Legion was sent back to the realm from which they came, but all of this made the Well incredibly unstable, and the sundering of the land took place. Kalimdor was split apart, with the Maelstrom as an eternal reminder of what had happened. Despite that, the world was saved from the Legion, and the Night Elves decided that using arcane magic, that which made all of this happen to begin with, that was not a good plan. Despite Illidan Stormrage using vials filled with water from the original Well of Eternity to make a brand new one, they still decided to make the use of arcane magic punishable by death. The Highborn that had joined them, they simply couldn't stop though. They saw arcane magic as their birthright, and since there were so many of them, the rest of the people decided to not massively execute them all. Instead, they were banished. Dathomir led his people to a land that would later be known as the Eastern Kingdoms. They stayed in Tearsfall Glades for a while, until they moved to a better land in the north. Following the trails of magical essence, their journey took them into the lands that the Amani Trolls called home. As you might imagine, their arrival, it infuriated the Trolls, who still harbored a bitter hatred of the Elves from the days of Queen Azshara. The Amani wasted no time in sending out raiding parties, and the Highborn soon learned to fear the Troll ambushes in the dense forests. Still, the Elves stubbornly pressed forward, using their magical powers to decimate any Amani who dared to cross their path. Soon enough, it was the Trolls who learned to fear their power, to be cautious in their attacks. The constant skirmishes, it built a mutual feeling of hatred between the Amani and the Highborn. Now, despite the Trolls' ferocity, the Elves did finally reach a spot where the magic was just right. Dathomir told them that this was where they would build a new civilization. He too had gotten his hands on a vial with enchanted waters from the Well of Eternity, and he used it to create a well of their own, a well that they called the Sun Well. Moving away from their traditional worship of the moon, the Highborn now took their strength from the sun. In time, they'd even go from Night Elves to being High Elves, and they called their new land Quel'Thalas, also known as High Home. The Trolls, however, they were not too happy with the new neighbors, as the High Elves had built a new kingdom atop ancient Amani ruins. Ruins that the Trolls still considered to be holy ground. They outnumbered the High Elves by more than 10 to 1, and they did everything that they could to drive these invaders from their sacred lands. The High Elves, in turn, they drew on the full might of their brand new well, barely holding off the Trolls' assaults. Dathomir himself, he led every battle against the fierce Amani. Fellow Malorn in hand, they carved out the borders of their kingdom. Their new home was paid for in the blood of the brothers and sisters, yet the High Elves had not forgotten what the abuse of arcane magic had done. To prevent another catastrophe, they worked on hiding their spellwork from the Legion. Over several decades, a series of runestones, they were built around the borders of Quel'Thalas. They called this Ban Dinioreel, or commonly known as the Gatekeeper. Not only would it hide their use of arcane magic, it would also frighten away the superstitious Amani. With the use of their magic, the High Elves were eventually able to force the Trolls to retreat all the way back to their temple city of Zul'Aman. The Trolls decided that it was safer to ambush elven convoys that moved too far beyond the magical barrier than to launch a full-scale assault on Quel'Thalas. To counter this threat, an elite group of High Elf Rangers soon rose up to keep the convoys safe, and with a brand new empire established, Dathomir stepped down as their leader. His bloodline would go on to inherit a kingdom of peace and prosperity, but peace often doesn't last long in the world of Warcraft. His great-grandson, Anastarion Sunstrider, he put on the mantle of leadership in a time where their people faced war with the Trolls once again. Some new neighbors flourished in the Eastern Kingdoms as well. A race known as the Humans, descendants from the Vrykul that had taken their malformed children to the area. Back then, they still lived in separate tribes, warring with one another for land and power, very similar to how Trolls used to live. Only one tribe, the Arrafi, led by warlord Furadin, they realized that what they were doing was not the way to go. Troll incursions into the territories, they become more pronounced and ruthless. Something was changing amongst the brutish Amani to the north, and the Arrafi knew that if humankind did not unite, they would stand little chance against a true war with its musk-skinned foes. They worked hard on bringing their rivals under one single banner, be it by force or diplomacy. Eventually, King Foradin named his new kingdom Arafor and tasked his most gifted builders with constructing a mighty capital called Strom. The area around this new city, it was a perfect buffer zone between humanity and the Amani, preventing the trolls from launching their much-feared forced ambushes. He also ordered his people to build a massive wall near the capital to keep the Amani out. Word of Son's might, it quickly spread amongst the human tribes that had not yet joined them, and they all quickly moved to the fortress for safety in numbers. Just as Foradin had expected, the Amani trolls soon began moving in on their outlying lands. Two generals were sent out to gather intelligence on their enemies and stop any of the brutes who moved too deep into Arafor's borders. One of them was called Igneous, who went well beyond their borders, slaughtering any trolls that they found skulking in the woodlands. He would earn himself the name Trollbane for the huge amount of Amani blood that he spilled. The second general was called Lordane, who patrolled the edges of the northern borders, putting any of the Amani that dared to enter their kingdom to the blade. Both of them returned to Strom with stories of a horrific conflict brewing between the Amani and the High Elves. There were also whispers of something else stirring in the Dark Forest, tales of strange voodoo rituals and supernatural beings prowling the wilds in the dead of night. Disturbing reports, but still Foradin and his generals, they agreed that they would not risk their own kind or send any aid to reclusive elves. For the time being, they kept their forces behind their massive ramparts, confident that they could withstand any kind of foe. So it was that the trolls of Inzulaman, they were planning their revenge upon the High Elves. Fierce warriors they might be, they lacked a strong leader who could bring them the victory that they so desperately needed. They even started to fight amongst themselves, threatening to destroy their tribe from within, but thankfully, they did receive aid from the Zandalar tribe. The Zandalari, powerful and respected, they saw themselves as the protectors and spiritual leaders of all the other trolls. They were eager to strengthen their societies across Azeroth, since time had not been kind to them since the Great Sundering. Even the Zandalari themselves had suffered. Their once glorious mountains of Zandalar, they were swallowed by the sea, reduced to nothing more than a small island. It was in the Amani that the Zandalari saw an opportunity to revitalize one of their most powerful tribes and reassert troll dominance within the Eastern Kingdoms. Taking out the High Elves, it would not be an easy task, but the Zandalari were confident that they could claim victory. After all, Quel'Thalas was not as powerful as that ancient Night Elf Empire that had decimated the trolls so long ago. On top of that, over the millennia, they had also honed and perfected their own voodoo arts, power which they were more than ready to unleash upon the elves. A handful of wise Zandalari emissaries, they made the trip from their island home to Zulaman, and there they promised to help the Amani plan for war. More importantly, they also pledged that the mighty Loa demigods, they would aid the trolls in the battle to come. And to settle the question as to who would be leading all of them, the Zandalari selected Jinta, one of the Amani's most fearless warriors, to take the job. Soon enough, small Amani warbands emerged from the forest and attacked Quel'Thalas' borders, testing out the High Elf strength, always keeping their true numbers and capabilities hidden. After a couple of successful skirmishes, the Amani decided that it was time for their all-out war. Without warning, tens of thousands of troll fighters, they exploded from the shadowy forests. Monstrous Loa demigods marched alongside the Amani, infusing their troll adherents with supernatural might. The High Elves did all they could to hold back their foes, but they had no other choice but to give ground. With astonishing speed and ferocity, the Amani laid waste to the outer reaches of Quel'Thalas. From Zulaman, the Zandalari emissaries watched the unfolding war with great pleasure. Even the elves and their potent arcane powers could not withstand the might of the Amani, the might of the entire troll race. Their ultimate victory was only a matter of time, but the elves were not going to go out without a fight. They sent ambassadors to Strom to talk with Foradin and his people. The king had kept an eye on the war between the High Elves and the Trolls, and the scouts had reported that the Trolls were winning the war. Still, they held on to the belief that stepping into the conflict, it would only put their people at unnecessary risk. But the words of the ambassador, it quickly changed their minds. The Amani threat was far greater than Foradin or his advisors could have possibly imagined. Without assistance from Arafor, the Trolls would soon enough destroy Quel'Thalas, and after that launched their full might against Strom itself. Foradin and his advisors, they discussed the situation and figured that if they were taught the ways of magic, it might give them the edge that they needed to truly make an impact in the war. Their offer to the elves was in exchange for their military aid. The High Elves would teach the humans magic. Now knowing that they had little choice, they agreed to tutor 100 of their people. And so they did. Arathor began his offensive against the trolls. Over 20,000 human soldiers, they gathered at Altrek Fortress. From there, it was Foradin himself who led his forces towards Quel'Thalas. Wisely, they kept the human spellcasters behind the walls of Altrek, for if things played out as Foradin hoped, they would have the role to play. After weeks of hard marching, the full might of Arator's army smashed into the southern flank of the Amani. In coordination with the Arafi, the High Elves then launched a counterattack from the north, and they laid waste to the Trolls' front lines. Now the Amani had to fight on two fronts, yet Yinta, he still remained confident that they would emerge victorious. The Elves' decision to ally themselves with these primitive humans, it simply reeked of desperation. They were but a minor nuisance, one that Yinta and his fierce warriors would quickly eradicate. Intent on destroying Arator's armies, they turned their warband south, and once they were destroyed, Yinta figured that they could just refocus on Quel'Thalas and exterminate the Elves for good. But this was exactly what Foradin had hoped for. He ordered them to slowly retreat back towards Alterac. Weeks of brutal and bloody fighting followed, as the overconfident Amani did chase them all the way to the mountains. As the humans moved south, the High Elves moved from Quel'Thalas and they marched to Alterac as well. They constantly assaulted the northern flank of the Amani, slowly chopping down the Trolls' rear guards. What Foradin had not expected was the speed by which the Amani gained on the humans. They were threatening to overwhelm them, but General Lordaine, he volunteered to stop the Trolls, knowing full well that he would never survive this mission. He and 500 of their bravest warriors, they held off the Amani host in a narrow valley, where their numbers meant little. The rest of the Arafi army, they continued moving south, and the ultimate price paid by Lordaine and his warriors, it allowed Foradin's plan to succeed. They finally reached Alterac Fortress, with the Amani hot in pursuit. One morning, as a thick fog enveloped the Alterac foothills, the Amani fell upon the human army. Although greatly outnumbered, the Arafi fought back with unexpected tenacity. Days went by, with neither side giving ground. Soon enough, the High Elves came in from the north, and they attacked the Amani on a second front. When the humans and Elves were confident that they had worn down the Amani ranks, they decided that the time had come to unleash the secret weapon. Together with the Elven sorcerers, the human Magi kept hidden with the fortress, they called upon their vast newfound powers. Instead of simply attacking one by one, they all pooled their power and wove a single terrible spell. The mountains heaved and trembled, and torrent of fire lashed down from the blood-red sky. The energies engulfed the Amani ranks. The sorcerer's flame burned Loa and Troll alike from the inside out. One of the first to be consumed by these enchanted flames, that was the leader Yinta. Without him, the surviving Trolls quickly broke their ranks and they retreated north. The Elves and humans, of course, gave chase. They hunted them down like game, slaughtering every Amani combatant that they could find. The Zandalari emissaries, they could not believe what had happened. Once so confident of the victory, they now scurried back to their island home in disbelief and shame. For them, and many of the other Trolls, this defeat marked a dark turning point in their history, one from which their race never truly recovered. The glory days in which the Trolls ruled the world, that had come to an end, but for Quel'Thalas and Arator, the victory in the war was the beginning of a glorious new era. For months, they celebrated their victory, and the Elves pledged their undying loyalty to Arator and to Foradin's descendants, a pledge that would play a role by the time that the Horde found its way to Azeroth and teamed up with Zul'jin and the remaining Amani. However, that's all we're going to say for next week, so for now, thank you very much for watching, everyone. Again, hope my voice was alright, I'm dealing with a cold right now, and of course the health issues, but what can you do? Either way, subscribe if you like my videos, leave a like if you enjoyed this one, and until next time, guys! See ya!
Hey. I used to play Alliance to the death, loving my space goat, but I confess, obligatory, I rolled a horde. I guess I thought that I'd regret the choice. To my surprise, it did not disappoint. Thought it meant nothing, but it changed everything. I went to town to see what's up. Already calling it bloodlust. I hear a noise, I hear a sound, like thunder and it shakes the ground. I went to town to see what's up. In trade chat and thunder bluff, I see it all, I see it now. This is the side that is mightier and higher. Passion like a fire, cause we are the champions, and we're shouting for the whole. Oh,
battle cry. Rolling with the horde has changed my life. I left my blue and gold, went red when I re-rolled.
I went to town to see what's up. Already calling it bloodlust. I hear a noise, I hear a sound, like thunder and it shakes the ground. I went to town to see what's up. In trade chat and thunder bluff, I see it all, I see it now. This is the side that is mightier and higher, passion like a fire, 'cause we are the champions and we're shouting.
That was Ember Asolte with her song For the Horde. I think Sylvanas can do that way better. Wanna give it a try, Dark Lady?
For the Horde!
That's what I thought. Thank you. Next up, we have some pet battling with Hazel. Today she's going to introduce us to Shadow, the charity pet we got a couple of months ago. And since this video of hers on YouTube is a couple of, or maybe one, I don't know, a month or two old, she didn't know back then that it was going to be available as a plushie as well, which it is now. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I chose to play this video, the audio of it anyway. So if you decide to give some money to charity, you can choose between the in-game pet, Shadow, or the plushie. And if you want to go all out, which is okay too, since it's for charity, you can get both. I don't think they offer a bundle though, but yeah. Here's Hazel.
Hi, I'm Hazel and this is Shadow. Shadow is the latest charity shop pet that's been added to WoW. In this video, we're going to take a good look at his fluffy little model, animations, stats and moveset, and a look at how Shadow does in action. This pet was originally planned to be unveiled at BlizzCon, but due to recent natural disasters, he's hitting your in-game shop a little early. Until the end of 2017, 100% of Shadow's $10 adoption fee supports disaster relief efforts from Red Cross. Keep in mind that you can pay that fee normally or with Blizzard Balance, so if you've got the gold for a WoW token to turn into balance, that will also do it. While Shadow is both a lovely and an apt name for this pet, it does pull up a bunch of stuff in the pet journal. I chose to give mine a nickname so that I can search for it more quickly. Fingers crossed that we get that whole lowercase journal nickname bug sorted out. Shadow's model is kind of a cat, and kind of a dog, and more than anything else resembles a fennec fox. Now and then, she'll change between a yellow light color and a purple shadow color, with little animations for each change. A variety of runes appear over her forehead, which could be mystical secrets, fashion, or some kind of ancient Naru error message explaining why the little fluffer can't stick to one color. I'm not complaining. For animations, we have a mix of feline and canine antics. Shadow will sometimes spontaneously bust a move with the hoppy little wolf dance. If you target her and slash sit, she'll crawl into your lap just like a cat. Otherwise, we have pretty normal idle animations such as sniffing, sitting, or laying down for a nap. Shadow sports a magic type, and at level 25, we're looking at 1,319 health, 289 attack, and 305 speed. He's pretty quick, he packs a reasonable punch, but he is quite delicate. In your first move slot, you can take Shadow Shock or Solar Beam, the second slot can be Void Portal or Light, and the third slot can be Call Darkness or Flash. You have your pick of blind moves to set up bonus light damage, or you Void Portal out of there before something really bad smacks you. Shadow's only spammable damage move is Shadow Shock, so beware of being caught with nothing to press if you do decide to take Solar Beam. Just for fun, let's unleash the beast and see how Shadow does in action. At this point in our nail-biting showdown, some good cleaving has been done, but not one of the enemy pets is actually dead. Shadow Shock, of course, has variable amounts of damage, and sometimes you just need to cross your fingers and roll the dice. Now that we've gotten handily lucky with that, it's time to try out the beloved Flashlight combo, which is also available on Lantern Pets. The really, really nice thing about Flash is that it reduces the enemy hit chance by 50% for 2 rounds. If you cross your fingers and you cross your toes and you get kinda lucky, you might just squeak by untouched. Then, of course, since you've blinded them, Light will hit for 309 damage, twice. Because we went with Flash and not Call Darkness, we don't have to worry about our own accuracy being reduced, so that smacks down nicely. I did not play around with Void Portal or Solar Beam today, but I think it's safe to say that while it's not going to replace your top-notch pet, Shadow will do its best and occasionally make you proud. So, that is the latest shop pet. It's hot on the heels of Twilight, but it's for a good cause, and I always seem to have room in my heart for more fluffy little cuddle buds. Thank you so much for watching. Please consider leaving a like if you liked it, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye!
Ludra the Mage here.
And I'm Ben the Mage.
Ben, we need to get our people in order.
What? Don't we collect pets? I mean, I'm not really comfortable with the whole collecting people thing. But, well, I mean, I guess we kind of do with our garrisons and class halls. Huh. Collect
pets? No, Ben, but also yes, because I'm talking about class halls. Good.
Okay, well, honestly, you're not really talking about anything, at least anything that makes sense.
Fine, if I have to spell it out for you. Were you the renegade mage who sanctioned this whole mage on mage hate? What about your monk? Did you go, oh, well, I guess since we're done with demons, we should fight each other now?
No?
So, okay, so it's someone else. Who's in charge of our classes besides us? Because they went ahead and went war. That's what we need to do. War.
Well, yeah, they're the faction leaders. Or maybe even those guys at Blizzard.
Ben, I really don't think this was thought through. I mean, I would never split my beloved class up. Ugh, we chill at Hogwarts all the time. It's been really great.
Well, while Aludra looks for the people in charge, make sure to check out Battle Pets episode 119, where we chat about BlizzCon and some other stuff, but mostly BlizzCon.
Demon hunters at war with each other? Huh, no, makes no sense. Senpai does not approve this!
And that's been it for us at Corpse Run Radio for this episode. I want to thank the following contributors to episode 31. Patty Madsen for the awesome voice work she's done. Silver Latomi, Cavo350, Asmon Gold, Charm, Noble87, Amber Assaulte, Hazelnutty Games, and since we got a little announcement for PvP changes at BlizzCon, I have a little PvP one-on-one thing for you guys to listen to. It's by PvP Girl, Gigi, and Crycoder. So those two are going to duke it out at the end. If you have questions for the show or any suggestions of any kind, you can reach the show at Corpse Run Radio. We have a Facebook page with the same name, Corpse Run Radio, and you can write us emails. The email address is corpserunradiomail@gmail.com. You can reach me, Grand Negus, on Twitter at GrandNegus1, and my email address is towerofcommerce@gmail.com. Have a great day, and until next time. Bye.
Well now, Crycoda, it looks like it's just you and me. Let's do this.
Our teammates are dead, now it's one-on-one. You try to stealth up, but it's far from done. A flare will take care of your creep's no gun. This kitten is just sitting scattered, that's so fun.
So fun, run, you can't run, cause I'm pouncing on your face. This rip will just tick while I'm sitting here in place. As I try to survive, bare form takes shape. Now you're running and I'm stunning, so I do not have to chase.
Now I flash, beast of wrath, and it gets me out your path. Disengage, jump back, like a ninja from the past. Intimidate, it's rash, now the sun is switched back. How you feeling? Not a feeling, them my cat's up in your ass. Code Affairs, I'm mad that he's just been upstage. What's that in his eyes? Do I detect enrage? Chill pill for the thrill as I shoot you with the trank. Sedated, kinda jaded, cause my trankin' shot was laced.
How you feeling now?
I can't even get to you. I try to bare form charge, but I can't get a view. Your LOS is impeccable, I'm kinda screwed. Trap positioning's awesome too, you got me fooled. Regeneration is frenzied, you tear me apart to my heart, so I just count my blessings. Ugh, guess I misread. She scared the beast right out of my head, and now I'm dead.
Frostbite. Good boy.
Mwah. Thank you for listening. Now go out, my minions. Let nothing stand in your way. Until next time.